Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Burke class destroyer are the backbone of the United States Navy surface fleet. Over 500 feet long, they displace 9,000 tons, and it is the sports car of the United States Navy. From the keel to the mast, they stand nearly 10 stories tall, and their four gas turbine engines can drive the ship at 30-plus knots. These ships are armed to the teeth with surface-to-air missiles, land attack cruise missiles, anti-ship missiles, anti-submarine rockets, torpedoes, 5-inch naval guns, multiple electronic warfare systems, embarked helicopters, extending the reach and capability of each and every one of these destroyers.
It's a bad boat. I mean, it's a really bad boat. If you ever, I think the most popular version of this that you might have come across, if you don't recall, but the TV show The Last Ship, was the ship that they were using, was an Arleigh Burke class destroyer. And what General Dan Kane, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, was explaining yesterday is, you know, what is the tip of the spear out there doing the interdiction, out there stopping these 13 so far ships from entering the Iranian ports via the Strait of Hormuz? They're not blockading the whole strait, they're just blockading the access to the port in and out. And he says, look, you know, all of this multi-billion dollar equipment is fantastic, but the real weapon is, as we have learned many times from our local tenant commanders who come and explain to us that training the person is the most vital part of what everybody does.
But far and away, the most important weapon on board these ships is the American sailor. Over 300 warfighters are the heart and soul of these warships. At sea, sometimes for months, and these ships out in the CENTCOM AOR have been out there for months. They operate around the clock in a constant state of readiness, always delivering for our joint force.
Absolutely. And then, the description of what they're doing in a crowded marine environment like this?
On that bridge, our sailors maintain a constant watch, maneuvering the ship tactically and safely through always congested water space. And there is a lot out there. It is like driving a sports car through a supermarket parking lot on a payday weekend with thousands of kids in that parking lot as you attempt to maneuver through there to get to that ship that would attempt to run that blockade. Down in the Combat Information Center, the CIC, the Tactical Warfare Center of the ship, that is where the decisions are made. As threats appear, these young sailors are making real-time decisions on how to identify these threats and handle them, and they always deliver.
And it is, you know, if you really think about what they're doing, it's not so easy. And if you've ever been out on a boat, you know, you've done small craft maneuvering, and in a crowded environment, like, you know, 4th of July or Blue Angels or something. You know what it's like to deal with a lot of boats being around. You got to be really careful. Well, the Arleigh Burke class destroyer is a little bit larger than that. And the challenges are a little bit more profound than that. And plus, they're not just dealing with the drunk buddy over there. They're dealing with, you know, drunk buddy in the cargo container ship and the fishing trawler. And, the stakes are significantly higher, not even including the prospect of actual threats coming to them. And then this is the part that I thought was the most interesting. I have a bias when I think about the military, and my bias is because of who I know. The people that I talk to the most are people at the 06 and 7, like admirals and captain level, some commanders, but mostly the people that I know, people I have on the show, they're either current or retired, like that level. And so, I mean, just like, you know, when I'm talking to the county commissioner, or I'm talking to the owner of the business, or I'm talking to the state representative, you know, like it's kind of like the, not really the best way to say it, but top of the pyramid, okay? That's who I tend to interact with a lot. But I noticed, well, like, when we were on the McCool, that, you know, like, the commanding officer is a commander. And that's no slouch of a rank either, but it's, you know, it's one step down. And that, so to hear him talking about who's really running the show on board the destroyer, I found fascinating, because it's a great reminder that the people who are, you know, driving these ships and making these decisions and operating these weapon systems and calling out to the foreign vessels, hey, stop or else, are very early in their career sailors.
These ships are run by the youngest sailors in our surface warfare Navy. The helmsman, the sailor on the watch at the bridge, is normally just between 18 to 19 years old, and they are trusted to drive this warship through that supermarket parking lot without hitting anything. The conning officer, an equally young commissioned officer who's normally just a few years out of college, is the ones that are giving that young helmsman the orders on where to take that American warship to execute the mission that the secretary and the president has given us.
So you think we train them at NES Pensacola or Whiting, and then maybe a few years after that, they're ready to go out and work on a destroyer or work on an aircraft carrier? Well, I mean, there is some training in between, no doubt. But, you know, they're still pretty young when they're out there making these life and death decisions and operating in these very dangerous and difficult environments. And I don't know, for me, that's an important picture of the actual operation of our military, true also of the Army, true also of the Air Force, Coast Guard, Space Force, but particularly true of the Navy. And, you know, I appreciate him sharing that perspective. John, same? Like, just...
Oh, yes, for sure. Yeah, that just reminds you.
And it's so true. I mean, obviously, when I'm, like, I'm on these ships and I'm meeting these people, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, I get it. But it's still, sometimes you need reminding. 6:15 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Find out why Eric Swalwell got canceled. Brother Andrew will talk about that coming up next on the Transgressors Memorial Service. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. No accidents or delays to report to you right now. Everything is flowing smoothly this morning. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Hey, if you need a roof replacement or a repair, or you're not sure which it is, Quality Roofing Solutions, they've done 10,000 roofs in the last 20 years since 2006 when they started. They have a 4.9 rating on Google. That is amazing. And Brian Ward's idea when he started this company was, I just want to do construction in the way that people want, as opposed to the way they usually worry they'll get and often get, which is, you know, not feeling the best about it, wondering if you're getting taken advantage of, people talking down to you or treating you like you're, you know, because you don't know how to do this, you're not really, okay. Their idea is treat you like people, invest in the local community, and just do good work. And help people understand the choices that you're going to make. And then, you know, stand by it. They have, for example, a 100%, you know, lifetime workmanship warranty on their roofs. Which, who does that? Who does a lifetime warranty for workmanship? Nobody does. Well, they do. QualityRoofingSolutions.com, 777-0961.
Managing your ECUA service is easier. The new MyECUA mobile app puts everything you need right at your fingertips. From paying your bill, submitting service requests, and reporting issues like missed collections, damaged or lost bins, water main breaks, and sewer overflows, it's all right there in one easy-to-use app. Take control of your services anytime, anywhere. So download MyECUA. It's available in the App Store and Google Play.
My name is Christine, and I'm a widow. My husband, Ryan, was a healthy 34-year-old, and 3 months later, he was gone. Thankfully, he had life insurance. Ethos made it so easy. You can get a quote in seconds, apply in minutes, and get same-day coverage. 100% online, no medical exam. Life insurance didn't take away the loss, but it did give us the space to just grieve.
Get your free quote at ethos.com/save. ethos.com/save. Paid spokesperson. Time spent on application may vary. Online health questions required.
Here's what's happening around Pensacola this week. Friday night, it's another gallery night in downtown Pensacola from 5 till 10. This month, it's a celebration of Navy Days. See gallerynightpensacola.org for more. Enjoy Florida Lighthouse Day at the Pensacola Lighthouse Saturday from 10 till 3. The free event includes games, activities, and fun for the family. Presented by Florida Arts and Culture. See pensacolalighthouse.org. Submit your events at newsradio923.com.
You're busy. You just need to know what's happening.
What's happening?
Pensacola right now
with Chris and Austin.
Weekdays 4 to 7 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
first remembrance is for Democratic Congresswoman and California gubernatorial candidate Eric Swalwell, whom several women have accused of sexual misbehavior up to and including rape. Swalwell has denied all wrongdoing, but nevertheless has withdrawn from the governor's race and resigned from Congress because nothing says I'm innocent like quitting in the face of allegations. Well, I, for one, just want to say how great it is that 10 years after the hashtag MeToo movement began, it's still going strong enough to remove such a powerful man from office so quickly. Assuming the allegations are true, and remember that as 65th wave feminists, we always assume all men are guilty of everything, this is yet another lesson to all members of the patriarchy. Your reputation, position, and power are all subject to rapid disintegration based on a few unproved salacious allegations. Remember, it doesn't matter whether any particular set of Me Too claims are true or not. It only matters that any man at any time can be targeted and brought down. All the better if he's actually guilty. But even if he's not, we relish using this power to scare the innocent into compliance, even if we also recognize that there really is no such thing as an innocent man. And for those of us who say, or those of you who say, it's not fair for all men to feel threatened in this way, just remember the core injustice we're undoing. Men have been unfairly hoarding power, privilege, and wealth from women for millennia. And if that scale becomes a little imbalanced in favor of women for a little while, that's not a problem. That's just the pendulum of fairness swinging back to the female side of the ledger. Even if we're all equal going forward, centuries of gender reparations are still due to women. And, you know, the fear of suffering false allegations and the sense of powerlessness that fosters would be a good thing for most men to experience because it would teach them how unpleasant it is to be an oppressed person, a lesson in humility they genuinely need. But even though we cheer the ouster of Swalwell, we should still keep in mind that this case specifically shows the inadequacy of both the legal system and major media, since once again the ouster was started and developed on social media based on one video interview with one victim. The patriarchy turned a blind eye until it couldn't ignore these women any longer. So although he is out, what have we learned? Well, meeting with a Chinese spy will not oust you from Congress. Having an unrepentant episode of on-screen flatulence will not oust you from Congress. And trying to run for president prematurely against Uncle Joe will not oust you from Congress. But having sexually inappropriate conversations, groping a thigh without consent, sending women unwanted willy pics, and getting them drunk or drugging them and raping them, or at least the allegations thereof, is plenty potent enough to oust you not only from Congress, but from becoming the next governor of California as well. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, this week's three-stringed lyre of justice with two Asahi tassels goes to the collective efforts of the 50 state bar associations to be more inclusive. As the Wall Street Journal reported, there have been dramatic improvements in the accommodations given to people who take the bar exam. California, for instance, allowed 14% of test takers to have more time to complete the exam due to disability, up from just 4% 10 years ago. In D.C., the numbers went from 5 to 15%, and Illinois jumped from 2 to 13%. The most common reasons for a time accommodation are attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, anxiety, and learning disabilities. And so the entire legal industry is now actively working to help slower, awkwarder, nervouser, and more easily distracted people become lawyers. Surely an ideal outcome. Even law firms are now pairing new hires with experienced attorneys in a sort of big attorney, big paralegal system called body doubling to help bridge the ability gaps of the incoming employees who are now having an easier time getting past the bar. After all, why shouldn't lawyers who think more slowly or get distracted or suffer anxiety have their day in court too, so to speak? A world of attorneys who need more time for everything sounds like a fine place. In fact, we wonder why there are even time limits at all. Bar exams without time limits would surely eliminate the unjust mental speed divide between participants, and if we're being serious about remedying the ability gaps and the bigotries that come from them, why not eliminate the bar entirely? Anyone who takes the bar is clearly serious about becoming a lawyer, and if someone is serious about practicing law, why should he be discouraged from that just because he isn't very good at memorizing, you know, legal principles and precedents? Some people have memory deficiency. Some people have an inability to focus. Some people feel such anxiety they can't speak effectively in public. Others may not be able to read well. And whose fault is that? Well, certainly not the student's fault. So we see a future where anyone who wants to become a lawyer gets to be a lawyer with no bar exam at all. It's the only fair and inclusive thing to do. But why stop at just lawyers? What about teachers? Are people to be prohibited from teaching just because they aren't good at school? It's not someone's abilities and objective performance that should determine their career path, but the trueness of their heart's desires. What about doctors and nurses? Why should someone be turned away from medicine just because she struggles to recall parts of the body, doesn't do well at categorizing symptoms, and can't remember which pharmaceuticals have which side effects? Who are we to tell people who have comprehension and memory issues that they can't be doctors or nurses too? Surely, if persons with autism, anxiety, or ADHD can become lawyers, why not teachers and doctors and virtually anything else as well? Competency testing is so fundamentally ableist that we're surprised it's been in practice this long. Who wouldn't want to be operated on by an alternatively abled surgeon who can't identify internal organs under stress and can't make decisions in an emergency due to crippling anxiety? So kudos to you bar associations and law firms all over the land for literally lowering the bar for everyone. As Guy is my witness, it's about time we move towards the standards and competency-free utopia our principles of wokeness say we all deserve. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, as a result of the great work being done with the bar exam, our holy wokest thought leaders have instructed us to start working on an exciting new project. A second holy acronym string. As all of you know, our order is committed to several holy paradoxes, the fourth of which is the confounding pair of beliefs that people who are alternately abled are so much less capable of doing things that they must be helped or accommodated in order to bring them even with the traditionally abled, and yet at the same time that their alternative abilities are in no way any lesser than those whom we classify as traditionally abled. Critics say it is illogical to hold both views, but we say love knows no bounds, not even those of logic. And as a way of formally honoring those with alternative ability styles, what some people call disabilities, the Third Interlateran Conclave on Ecumenical Ecumenism has decided that we should begin offering full inclusion and recognition to people with non-standard abilities, just as we already do in solidarity with people of non-standard lifestyles and genders. Obviously, the list of identified conditions will include attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, autism spectrum disorder, ASD, behavioral disorders, BD, including oppositional defiant disorder, ODD, and conduct disorder, CD. There is fetal alcohol syndrome disorder, FASD, physical neurological disabilities, PND, such as cerebral palsy, CP, epilepsy, E, Down syndrome, DS, and Tourette syndrome, TS. There are perceptual disabilities, such as speech, hearing, and visual impairments, SI, HI, and VI, respectively. And of course, there are intellectual disabilities, such as dyslexia for reading, dyscalculia for math, and dysgraphia for writing, DDDD, or what I like to call the old quadruple D. People of low IQ are currently being represented by the abbreviation IQ-, which you might think they would find insulting, but they don't understand, so it's fine. There was some conversation around anti-science bias disorder, ASBD, for people raised in religious households, particularly those who were homeschooled, but nobody wanted to offer help to the Christians for obvious reasons. So a proposed early option we have is to now refer to all of our sister and other and brethren who struggle with alternative abilities by the now preliminarily approved second holy acronym string. ADHD, ASD, BD, ODD, CDFASD, PND, CPEDS, TSSI, HIVI, DDD, D, and IQ minus persons. It will probably take a little getting used to, but as we always say, justice isn't easy. If it were, everyone would do it. So in order to kick off our disability inclusion efforts, we're hosting a special workshop Tuesday here at the 7th, 1st, 15th Holy Spiritual Center of Glorious Equality Reformed. Over in Personship Hall, we will be hosting our inaugural Disability Expo, helping you answer the key questions, do I have a disability, and am I entitled to accommodation? There will be tutorials to teach you all the latest and greatest disabilities, both to self-diagnose and to find in others. Even if you think you don't have a disability, you're still encouraged to attend for awareness and for discovering whether perhaps you do have disability deficit disability, a condition which is surprisingly common in people who think they have no disability at all. We will, of course, be singing the most recent hit song from the Pop Justice supergroup, We Are the People. You know how it goes. Everyone's disabled. Everyone is born with disability. Don't worry if you don't know it. We recognize memory and musical disabilities as well. So we'll see you all on Tuesday, or whenever you happen to show up. We know time blindness is a real disability, too. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sisterin, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
Sean Pickens has traffic on the five.
Don't even worry about it.
Nothing going on?
Oh, goodness, no. Actually, right. There's not, but
At least I can pass the bar now.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
But that second string.
Yeah, it's well, you'll figure it out eventually.
Okay, I'm going to Tuesday.
David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. Oh, by the way, there's another aspect of that story about the disability thing and lowering the bar exam. Who is finding disabilities? It's rich parents paying for diagnoses for their kids so that they have a better time of getting into the college of their choice. In wealthy or affluent neighborhoods, as many as 30% of the high schoolers have disability identification diagnoses, whereas about 3% in lower income areas because they can't afford to pay for the people to come do the diagnosis to get them. So now diagnoses of disability meant to benefit people are being abused by privileged, wealthy people for their kids to get them into school. It's all insane. Anyway, David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning. An investigation is underway after a bomb threat was made against one of Pope Leo's brothers. Police in New Lenox, Illinois, confirmed yesterday that they'd received a call about a reported bomb at the house of John Prevost the night before.
All right, David, thank you so much for the update. Oh, I was talking about the 06s versus everybody else, kind of, you know, who I know and who's in the military, and somebody who is a friend of mine is a captain basically texts in and thinks that I had the exact reaction. It was so nice to hear the junior ranks or the enlisted be celebrated. That's why General Kane makes such a great chairman of the Joint Chiefs.
Fox News, I'm Gianna Gelosi. The House passing a two-week extension of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act program known as FISA. The stopgap move comes after a dozen GOP holdouts voted against a long-term extension of the spy program over privacy concerns. House Speaker Mike Johnson is optimistic.
We were very close tonight. There's some nuances with the language and some questions that need to be answered, and we'll get it done. The extension allows us the time to do that.
Supporters say FISA is crucial to fight terrorism. Skeptics demand reforms like warrants and criminal prosecutions for FISA abuses. President Trump traveled to Vegas yesterday to highlight the benefits of his no tax on tips policy.
Employees who adjust their withholding levels now will see an immediate surge in their take-home pay for the remainder of 2026. You're going to see a big surge.
Today he goes to Arizona for a Turning Point USA event. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 6:31 at News Radio 92.3. We've got 63 degrees right now with clear skies. We'll get to a forecast with Brooke Richardson. That's up in just a few minutes. Well, one of the takeaways from yesterday's joint meeting between the city and county was this. Without a headquarters hotel nearby, Pensacola could struggle to compete for conventions that it's been turning away. Feasibility consultant Bill Krueger.
Through all of our surveys of the convention planners, you know, the state groups that rotate around the state, the regional, and some of the smaller niche national groups that can go anywhere in the country, I mean, emphatically, they told us that they need an attached headquarters hotel or one within close walking distance, which really means 1 to 2 city blocks in your case. And if you remember that statistic in that pie chart I showed you, 90% of all the groups that had an interest in bringing an event to Escambia County and downtown Pensacola told us that they prefer or require. Specifically, 60% said they require, and then the remaining 30% said that they would prefer that.
And both studies that were presented yesterday pointed to the Grand Hotel next door as a natural candidate to fill that role. The DMO, representing area hoteliers, told the joint session that with more than 500 new hotel rooms either under construction or in the planning stages downtown, they didn't think adding a publicly subsidized new hotel was the right move. The county and city did mostly agree on a direction at that meeting, though, renovating the Bay Center and adding a flex event space next door, as well as negotiating with Greg Harris of the Ice Flyers on that second sheet of ice. The city and county administrators are bringing a framework forward, possibly as soon as this June. Well, Beulah Regional Park is reopening to the public with a grand opening and a ribbon cutting on May 1st. The park on Mobile Highway has received some big upgrades, including new pickleball courts, a splash pad, new basketball courts, new picnic pavilions, ADA improvements, and drainage enhancements. The adjacent Beulah Senior Citizen Center Park also got new basketball courts, playgrounds, and a resurfaced walking track. Commissioner Steve Stroberger says the park is better than ever. He's looking forward to seeing families enjoy the new amenities. Again, the ribbon cutting on that is May 1st at 10 a.m. Spirit Airlines could potentially be headed towards liquidation. Pensacola International Airport officials say the local impact, if that happened, would be limited. Spirit accounts for about 3% of flights at the airport during peak season in July. Officials say that other carriers have already moved into Spirit's markets and customers would likely shift to other budget airlines like Breeze and Frontier. It's 6:34. Let's get a quick look at our forecast with Channel 3.
We are going to be looking at some lovely weather today with mostly sunny skies. Temperatures warming up today near 81 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 64. For Saturday, partly sunny skies, high near 82. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 60 degrees. For Sunday morning, 50% chance of some showers with some heavy pockets possible. Saturday afternoon, highs near 75 degrees. And Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 52. Stay connected, Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV Weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
62 with clear skies right now and at 6:35. Let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with John.
That's right. Brought to you by Knox Pest Control. Their family serving your family since 1929. For information on free pest or termite quote, you can visit knoxpest.com. Knox knocks them out. Still rolling accident free right now. Taking a look at I-10, I-110, 90, 98. They are all looking good. Even Highway 29, no delays there. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
And your next news in 30 minutes, breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter.com/free.
ZipRecruiter.
Looking for the best in flooring? At Jonathan's Flooring, you can select beautiful luxury vinyl plank flooring with the texture of wood, waterproof, and longer lasting. Jonathan's Flooring offers the most affordable pricing, first-class workmanship and installation, with a large selection of tile, carpet, or the latest in luxury vinyl plank flooring. Performance and sustainability is what makes Jonathan's Flooring the best choice for your floors. Stop by Jonathan's Flooring on North Palafox, south of 9 Mile Road, or online at jonathansflooring.com.
Step into your hometown boot store right here in beautiful Pensacola, Florida, where you can find the largest selection of Western boots and attire. The boot store also carries a great selection of workwear from boots to fire-resistant clothing. When you're looking for authentic wear accompanied with authentic service, show up at your hometown boot store, where you're more like family than you are a customer. 7801 Pine Forest Road in Pensacola and our second location on Highway 59 in Loxley. Remember, savings and selection are found behind the big red boot.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us today at 9:30 with me, Eldon Scott, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sunny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Scott, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
You don't need someone yelling at you.
You just want someone to say what you're already thinking.
That's MVR. Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins. They take the biggest stories of the day, cut through the nonsense, and say the quiet part out loud.
The American people have had enough.
Well, except for white women 55 plus.
There are a lot of white women that lean left.
Usually with a little sarcasm.
Thankfully, we know all the sane ones.
MVR. Weekdays 11 till 2 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, AM 1620. Informative, local, dependable.
Commissioners, this is it's an honor and a privilege to be able to present this proclamation to Waterfront Rescue Mission for the service that they do for our community, and especially for recognizing them for the cold weather sheltering that they provided for the last 3 years.
This is Travis Tompkins, the Escambia County Emergency Manager, giving a proclamation, not yesterday, I mean, that wasn't a regular board meeting, but at the most recent one, to Waterfront for their, you know, being the backup resource emergency shelter for cold weather.
Waterfront Mission has faithfully served individuals and families experiencing homelessness in Escambia County for more than 7 decades, providing emergency shelter, meals, recovery programs, and supportive service grounded in dignity, compassion, and hope. And for the past 3 consecutive years, Waterfront Mission has served as the designated emergency cold weather shelter for Escambia County, responding at the request of Escambia County Emergency Management whenever temperatures are forecasted to fall below 40 degrees and declared cold weather events. Waterfront Mission transitions into emergency shelter mode, operating 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and suspending normal operating procedures to ensure that no individual seeking shelter is turned away during life-threatening weather conditions.
Yeah, I mean, they have an operation that's already doing a lot all the time, but then particularly in cold weather.
And throughout these emergency activations, Waterfront Mission shelters an average of 194 individuals per night, providing warmth, safety, and care to some of the community's most vulnerable residents. And Waterfront Mission serves more than 600 meals daily during cold weather emergencies, ensuring those seeking refuge receive nourishment in addition to shelter. And at the highest point of sheltering during a recent cold weather event, Waterfront provided refuge to 210 individuals in a single night, including 51 women, demonstrating its capacity, preparedness, and commitment to serving all who are in need.
Including 51 women, and that's something that they've more recently become capable of doing, right? 2 years ago, I think, they expanded to have the women's side and just having that capacity. And also, you know, it might not be something you think about a whole lot, but we are in a warm climate, so most of the time, homeless people don't, you know, they can survive outside, right? When it's cold, they're not particularly prepared for that because of the normal warm climate. So it's extra important to have a place like Waterfront to help with that. And they do. And that's why I kind of wanted to feature this morning.
Now, therefore, be it proclaimed that the Board of County Commissioners of Escambia County, Florida, does hereby recognize, recommend, and express its sincere gratitude to Waterfront Mission for its unwavering service, partnership, and life-saving response during cold weather emergencies. And be it further proclaimed that the board acknowledges Waterfront's mission, vital role in Escambia County's emergency response system, and extends appreciation to its staff, volunteers, donors, and supporters whose collective effort make this critical work possible.
Absolutely. I love celebrating good work being done by good folks. And just, you know, side note, Waterfront is one of the organizations that we give to personally with our charitable donations. My wife and I, you know, manna, loaves and fishes, my father's arrows, Waterfront. These are ones that we personally support. So I'm a big believer in what they do. Fred Henderson, who runs the Pensacola Center.
I just want to thank this entire community, along with the commissioners and the ones who came to visit and see what we do. Waterfront Rescue Mission on severe weather nights turn into an emergency room. People who the least, the lost, the left out, the ones who've been rejected, the ones who have no place to go, it's a matter of safety for us. We want to make sure that the people in our community who are out on the street have a safe place to go.
Absolutely. I love Fred. He's amazing. I got a chance to meet him doing a tour back when they were opening the women's facility, and you know, he's exactly the person that you want in charge of all of this stuff. Heart of gold, loves the Lord, loves to serve people.
But you need to understand what that means. That means that we serve the mentally ill, the intoxicated, children and women and families in all in one location. It is a severe undertaking. And I just want you to know as the director that our staff is tasked with serving those individuals. A lot of overtime is involved, a lot of work is involved, a lot of patience is involved.
You know, when you think about it as just sort of an intellectual activity, taking homeless people off the street and, you know, keeping them safe for the night or two when it's, you know, really cold. It just, I mean, if you didn't think about it, it doesn't sound like that big of a deal. Just, you know, put them inside. It's fine. You're talking about drunk people, high people, violent people, people who don't get along well with others, people, you know, like when you really start to think about the practical details of handling that, you know, there are reasons that they don't come into the shelter normally, and all of a sudden they're in the shelter, and that can be a challenge. So I just appreciate them, and I thought that it was a good note for the county commission to remark about them and celebrate them for a second. Meanwhile, Palafox work continues and is getting closer and closer all the time.
Palafox update. That's my last thing. Curb and gutters, 90%. They will be done by the 24th. Irrigation install on Palafox is done. The pedestrian pavers, 90% complete. Those will be done by May 8th. Vehicular pavers, meaning the pavers that are the small parts of that where there are pavers in the streets, those are just getting underway, 10% complete. Those will also be done by May 8th.
Yeah, it's. I mean, you can really tell. I was downtown the other night for a thing on Wednesday. Yeah, Wednesday, and took a look around, and it looks phenomenal. The palm trees look great. The bricks, the pavers, everything. I've never been so excited to see storm drains in my life. But you know, as an adult, you realize the things that matter. And you know, why did it always flood on Palafox? Because there was no storm drain system at all. The street was the storm drain, and now we actually have an underwater system for vacating the water from Palafox. And you think they didn't have, no, there was nothing. And regrading the streets so that the water flows toward the drain. You know, just, it's funny how, you know, like, you know, civil engineering is stuff that you, like a lot of engineering, but civil engineering in particular is the kind of thing you just take for granted. Like, how do they know that bridge is strong enough? They know. You know, how do they know that that road surface will work the way it should? They know. How do they know it's safe to go 50 and not safe to go 60? They know. And the point is that all of these things that surround us all the time, and frankly, in America, we take it for granted that, you know, things are going to work well and be safe. A lot of other countries that don't have our building codes and our knowledge, or don't live up to it, or they live under a bribe system where you pay the officials instead of complying. I mean, all that kind of stuff doesn't really happen here. And as a result, we have, generally speaking, very reliable roads and bridges and drainage systems and the kind of stuff that you might think, well, nobody thinks about that. Right. Like the tech crew at the play, when the lights and the sound work right, you don't think about them. That's the goal. Well, when, you know, the stuff works right, you don't think about it. When it doesn't work right, then you think about it. They're fixing it. So the goal is to get no applause. They want you to not think about Palafox after you're driving on it in 5 weeks and you're looking at it and it's beautiful.
The Palafox specific completion, still on schedule, as we've always said, for May 24th. The side streets completion date, we've gotten this question, I know, from some businesses, because remember, this project goes beyond Palafox. The second phase will be doing alternating some of the side street work between Balin and Jefferson on those cross streets. That work will be through November 25th.
Because remember, the intersections go onto the cross streets, and the cross streets, there's going to have to be some work done there. But that's not, they're not waiting to reopen Palafox till that's done. They're just going to gradually work through those through the rest of the year, basically. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. Still rolling accident-free and delay-free. Not seeing anything that's going to slow you down. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. If you have a company, you have employees, you have to deal with benefits, you have to manage payroll and HR, you got to do health insurance, dental, vision, life, disability, all of that, Torgerson Consulting, they can help you with it. And if everything is going great with that in your current situation, whatever that is, then great. I mean, wonderful. Maybe you don't need to call them. Or maybe you think, I don't know, I wonder if they could do it better. And I don't know whether they can or not. You won't know until you call. It's no fee, no cost for them to come look at what you're doing. And I know for us here at News Radio, the reason we talk about them is because 5 years ago, we made a switch from another provider to them. And you know how sometimes you don't know how bad you've got it until you have it good? That's kind of how I felt. Like, it wasn't terrible before, but it wasn't the best. And now it's like, oh my God, it can be like this. You know, they're not miracle workers when it comes to health plans. The marketplace is what it is, but they go find the best plans. They give us choices between them so that we can pick what makes sense for us. And they answer questions and do a much better job of providing answers than, you know, really anybody I've ever worked with before. My wife she's great. She's an industrial engineer. She's very detail oriented. She reads the insurance, you know, agreement. Like, she reads the details and then she asks questions. And what she always says is, the problem with insurance-y types is they're good at sales, they're not good at details. Well, you know, at Torgerson Consulting, they're good at the sales part and the details. And, you know, Reed or them, they always get back to us right away or they have the question ready to answer. So anyway, I'm super happy to have them as our provider here at News Radio in Cat Country. Locally owned and operated, 20 years plus in business. Give them a call. No obligation to have them look at what you're doing. 433-9996 or online at tcbenefitsgroup.com.
Whether you want to start your education or advance your career, Pensacola State College is the place for you. Join the 91% of PSC students who graduate loan-free and select from over 100 programs, ranging from career certificates to baccalaureate degrees. In addition, Pensacola State has over 300 scholarships to choose from, including cybersecurity. Register today for the summer and fall semester. Go to pensacolastate.edu. That's pensacolastate.edu to learn more.
Bands on the Beach, presented by the Santa Rosa Island Authority, happens every Tuesday night at 7 at the Gulfside Pavilion on Pensacola Beach. Bring a blanket or a lawn chair and relax and enjoy the sunset with your favorite bands. This week, it's the Smokestack Band, a trio of musicians that have been playing all over Pensacola for 50-plus years. Join them for a multicultural musical experience. It's happening at Bands on the Beach this Tuesday night at 7. Remember, no pets or glass allowed.
Here's what's happening around Pensacola this week. Friday night, it's another gallery night in downtown Pensacola from 5 till 10. This month, it's a celebration of Navy Days. See GalleryNightPensacola.org for more. Enjoy Florida Lighthouse Day at the Pensacola Lighthouse Saturday from 10 till 3. The free event includes games, activities, and fun for the family. Presented by Florida Arts and Culture. See PensacolaLighthouse.org. Submit your events at NewsRadio923.com.
The Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay, weekdays 5 to 9 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative, local, dependable.
And I love to live so pleasantly. Live this life of luxury. Blazing on a sunny afternoon.
Good morning, 6:51 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. David? What, you wanted to keep listening to the Kinks?
No. I wanted to point out, after you heard that dial-up modem noise,
Oh, yeah.
The next thing you heard, and you should know this, you've got mail.
You've got mail, right. Which
sorry,
I never had AOL.
Oh.
I managed to skip that little bit of pain. So
sorry, David.
I have AOL coffee mug coasters.
Oh.
Installation CDs. Sorry, excuse me. I didn't explain it properly. David Wayne's in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, a man's facing charges after allegedly walking into Aetna's headquarters in Hartford, Connecticut with an AR-style weapon. That happened yesterday morning. Apparently, security was able to quickly stop that suspect. The commencement speaker's been cut from Utah Valley University over her comments about Charlie Kirk, the conservative activist, of course, shot to death at that event on campus last September. Sharon McMahon, who's often called America's government teacher, had been tapped to speak, apparently received an honorary degree at that university, and that's now been canceled after Utah Republicans were angry about that. McMahon had posted a comment condemning Kirk's murder, but said, quote, "A public assassination does not erase the harm many experienced from his words." So, did you know Zohran Mamdani was a rapper?
No.
It just seems so perfect. Go on.
So apparently New York City Mayor Zohran Mamdani was a rapper. He had a career as a Young Cardamom and Mr. Cardamom.
Young Cardamom for a Middle Eastern Muslim rapper.
And he,
that's funny.
Yeah, he apparently made about $1,600 in royalties last year. So there you go. I've never heard his music. I can't endorse it.
Well, you got to go find it now, obviously.
I'll have to fill in
that gap. It feels a little bit like the rap duo of Zohran Mamdani and George Santos was somewhere in the past that we haven't heard about, and that's the performance that I'm waiting to see.
We have to find it.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. This is for you, John.
You've got mail.
Did that pay off for you enough? Fulfill your
There you go, because that was the history. Next thing you heard.
That makes me laugh. All right, 437-1620. Oh, okay. There's news, but it's the kind of news that I don't want to get too excited about just yet. The Hawkshaw property is got final approval for final design, and it's been approved, and so it looks like that's going to get built. Now, I say I don't want to get too excited about it. If you don't know Hawkshaw, that's the Veterans Memorial Park downtown, right between that and what is the brand of that hotel that just got built there east of Aragon Court? I think that's a Hilton. Anyway, the vacant property in between that's been vacant, I mean, forever since decades. But that has finally gotten approval to be developed. And the only reason I say don't get too excited about it is because, you know, there's been other plans have come forward and other things seem like they were going to get built. And so this is not, when it's building, then I'll kind of get eager about it. Or if you hate the design, I suppose there are some people who do who live in that area. So we sold it to developers 8 years ago. Jim Little had a good article in the PNJ about this, that the Pensacola Planning Board basically approved it. 227-unit residential development. That's a lot of residential, 227. It's going to be, what, 7 stories tall? 7 or 8, I forget now. Anyway, 7-story residential development with a parking deck on the bottom 2 floors. So think twice the size of Southtown, I think, roughly. You know, certainly in height, okay? And I don't remember the number of units in Southtown, but I feel vaguely like it was in the, you know, just over 100, 150 kind of vicinity. Views of Pensacola Bay from a pool on the 3rd floor. It's kind of interesting. The name of the development will be The Helm. Little maritime nod at Hawkshaw. 20 studios, 141 bedrooms, 63 2-bedrooms, and 4 3-bedroom units. 8 trees are going to get cut down, including 3 heritage oaks. I hate to see that, but I also understand sometimes that does happen. I really just hope that the one, the really, really big one that's on the north side of the hotel on the northeast side there, that one doesn't ever go away because that is a gorgeous tree right there on that property. It's not the Hawkshaw property. It's the next bit over. Anyway, they're going to plant 68 trees. Residents were opposed. They were concerned about, building height, size, what it looks like. It's well under the 100-foot height limit for city code, but traffic impact. Now, interesting, I don't think traffic is going to be that big of a deal, and here's why. It's right on, Chase. I have to think which is Chase and Gregory. It's very close to Chase, 9th Avenue, Bayfront. And whenever I have driven through that area, if you go on 9th Avenue south of Chase towards Bayfront, I mean, there's nobody ever there. Maybe I'm driving at the wrong time of day. Maybe it gets congested, you know, in the morning, the afternoon, like everywhere else. But I don't know that traffic is going to be such a big deal, even though, sure, you dump 500 cars. I mean, 200 units times 2 cars is, you know, that's a lot. So I'm sure it won't be quite as easy to get through there as it has been in the past. But if you're going to have to put that kind of traffic change somewhere, that's actually a pretty good location because it's right on sort of major connectors as opposed to being buried in the back of some subdivision like, you know, Monarch Place is in the back of that stuff off of just east of Palafox. So anyway, this seems like good news to me. Jobs, construction, development, and there you go. 6:56 on News Radio 92.3. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. No accidents to report to you. Not seeing any delays either. I-10, I-110, Highway 29. Everything is flowing smoothly. Proud of you. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
Aw. How about a bad news story to follow that up?
I was trying to keep a warm fuzzy.
Keep it happy and good.
Yeah.
So you remember, 2 weeks ago, I guess it must have been, because that would have been the first Friday of the month, we talked with Ryan Jenkins. And what did he tell us about the war in Iran?
Called fertilizer.
That's right. And fuel and fertilizer, right? The price of diesel, the price of fertilizer. Well, we know diesel is killing the farmers right now. I mean, it's killing anybody who drives a rig or, you know, like we have relatives who, you know, they drive an RV and they move around and he's like, you know, it used to be, you know, $3.50 and now it's $5.50. And that really sucks, right? When you're getting, you know, 4 gallons to the mile or whatever an RV gets, right? It's terrible. So driving those, you know, combines around is expensive. And farmers weren't exactly living the life of lavish profits, right? So now, and Ryan told us it was diesel was a problem and also fertilizer. Well, now we've got a study done by a survey done by the American Farm Bureau Federation, April 3rd to 11th. And the survey says that 70% of the farmers that they surveyed said fertilizer is so expensive that they won't be able to buy all the fertilizer they need this year. They're making decisions about, well, do I not farm that field because I can't afford the fertilizer and the diesel? Or do I farm it, but not put the fertilizer out, which means that I'm going to lose crop yield. And so I'm having to figure out what is the math around what should I be doing? Can I still make enough money to make it make sense? Or what some of them are doing is they're going to go ahead and, you know, plow and plant and then hope that they can buy fertilizer later on the hope that the Iran war ends soon enough that the fertilizer prices start coming back down, which is, you know, I mean, we're talking about weeks matter, right? So how long is that going to actually take? So, yeah, very serious. I mean, follow-up and confirmation of what Ryan had already told us. Let's see. One of the writers here said, since the escalation of tensions in the Middle East, nitrogen fertilizer prices have risen more than 30%. Good Lord. With combined fuel and fertilizer prices have increased about 20 to 40%. Urea has gone up 47% since the end of February, marking the largest month-to-month increase in price of urea. These increases are occurring when many producers were already facing tight margins for many consecutive years. And many of the farmers they surveyed were, as I said, foregoing fertilizer in the spring in the hopes that price will return so that they can do it later on in the season. Hey, who feeds and clothes you, baby?